Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We continue on our 25-year series, and this has been just so much fun. But this is the 7th or 8th now we've recorded here. Josh Levine joining me today. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. How are you?
No complaints, not at all. There's a lot of Joshes in the world, but appreciate you coming on and doing this show. And we're going to talk specifically about that 2000 Jacksonville game at Baltimore, where Baltimore finally got the monkey off their back.
Yeah, I remember that game like it was yesterday. It's hard to believe. First of all, it's over 21 years ago. So if you were born the day of that game, you've had your 21st birthday and now can buy your own legal beer. But it seems just like yesterday.
It does.
And it was a gorgeous Sunday. The way it was probably a little hot, probably might have even favored the Jaguars that game. But what an experience that was, because, I mean, to me, the game was such a swing of emotions, and it was really a coming out party of the Ravens. I'm just excited to be able to have a chance to talk about it after all this time.
Yeah, it certainly is a wonderful day, and I've got to start this by saying this was the last Ravens game that I missed being at in person. In terms of home games, we've been to a fair number of road games too, but in terms of home games, this is the last one I missed. We had a big pool tournament that day, and I had to make the tough decision to go to that instead. And Maureen has lorded that over me ever since. Isn't that the game you missed? And I was there. She does that all the time. It's not like she's been to every game since either, but she went to that Jacksonville game, and it's a great memory for her. But take us through a little bit, because the Ravens had won in week one at Pittsburgh in very convincing fashion, 16-0. But this game, they'd never beaten the Jags in 8 tries, and Jacksonville coming to Baltimore, this was a big test for that team.
Yeah, it was. I remember that week one battle with Pittsburgh too, because we really dominated them that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 16-0, but it didn't feel like it. So, you know, this game kind of reminded me of the game we experienced a couple weeks ago when the Chiefs came to town. You know, this was. You know, it's probably hard for people to believe, because Jacksonville has been pretty horrific for the last, well, decade. But Jacksonville was really one of the cream of the crop teams of the AFC at that point, and they really had the Ravens' number. There had been a couple of really harsh games that Jacksonville had. Tom Coughlin really had that franchise going in the right direction in its infancy. And coming in, you felt like this season was different. You felt like there was something special about this season based on, you know, the Ray Lewis trial was over. We had the high draft picks with Jamal Lewis and Travis Taylor and Shannon Sharp, the big free agent. There were so many things that really felt like they were lining up and were special. But once that whistle blows and the game kicks off, you don't know what's going to happen. And to me, at the beginning, what we didn't want to have happened.
Yeah, that's for sure. So the Ravens got behind 17-0 in this game fairly early on, midway through the second quarter, I guess. I don't know what specific plays you want to talk about in terms of the turning it around or how you were experiencing the game at the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think before you get to the turnaround, I think the thing that really stood out to me was the way Jimmy Smith and Mark Brunell were in such lockstep, and it was possibly the worst game of Dwayne Stark's career. Mm-hmm. But some of it was also bad luck. There was a specific touchdown in the right corner of the end zone that Smith caught. Starks was in pretty good position. Rod Woodson was probably a step behind, and Jimmy still made a great catch to really put them up with that 17-0. But I think there was that big turnover the Ravens defense had. I wish I remember. You probably have the stats better. Maybe
sure.
In the second half. But they recovered the ball after scoring a touchdown. Maybe it was later in the game, and this is me showing my age. You might know what I'm talking about.
No, it's Jamie Sharper had a forced fumble on Mac with 10:09. It was way back in their own territory. And then the very next play, I think Jermaine Lewis scored to put him up 26-22.
All right. So I jumped way ahead. But that to me was the turnover and the play where I said we can win this game. And everything had happened. We had fallen down. We had started coming back. But when the defense stepped up and made that play, you could feel the energy of the entire stadium change. You could feel the energy of the players change right before your eyes. And when Lewis, when Jermaine, I got to say Jermaine, because we had three Lewises at the time that I can think of. Maybe there was a fourth, but Jamal, Jermaine, and Ray. When Jermaine scored the touchdown, everything changed. Like, the entire aura around that team changed. I was a believer at that point that the team all of a sudden believed that they were contenders right there.
Yeah, it was certainly that was a great sequence. So many great players on this team to talk about, but Jamie Sharp, a remarkable forced fumble player that year. He forced five fumbles that season, and he's not an edge rusher who gets a lot of opportunities to slap one free from the quarterback. These were good, punch it out from a running back fumbles, most of them.
Well, and the linebackers back then, we were really playing that 4-3 look back then. Yeah. So, and we had those edge rush guys, as you mentioned, and they were more hand in the dirt guys. I mean, it was a completely different defensive concept than what we see the Ravens do today. But Sharper, I mean, you think about the three linebackers we had starting that game with Bulwer, Lewis, and Sharper. I mean, what a talented group. And Jamie Sharper, probably an unsung hero who probably doesn't get enough credit that he deserves for all he accomplished. But that play was huge. And I still can visualize Ray Lewis's reaction when the Ravens had the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to talk about Ray being the heartbeat of that team. Holy smoke. Like, his energy is always infectious. But if you get a chance, for anyone who's listening, watch the highlights of this game and watch Ray Lewis's reaction when Sharper has the ball. It'll give you goosebumps now, 21 years later.
Yeah, I wonder if that game's available out on YouTube or whatever. I mean, I certainly have a copy of it, but it's a great game to rewatch when you have a chance.
Yeah.
So some of the other key moments maybe in this game for you in terms of turning points.
So I think, the biggest thing, even if you think about it going into, I think in the beginning of the second half, when the team came out, I mean, we were down at halftime, I believe it was 23-7. And when you really take a look in the third quarter, the 23-yard touchdown pass that Travis Taylor caught from Tony Banks, that, first of all, as a fan, it made me feel like, oh my God, we've got a wide receiver. We've got a special player here, wide receiver. Travis Taylor ran such crisp routes, particularly along the sideline that game. But that touchdown pass that Banks threw to him, all of a sudden you're thinking, hey, we could get back into this. Look at what we just did. And that's right at the beginning of the second half. They came back and got a field goal, but then we were able to get that ball back and then bring the ball back into, back down the field and start making things happen. I think that was Femi Iyanbideja's touchdown. But the touchdown pass from that Travis Taylor caught early on was so big. It opened things up for the Ravens offense. The Jacksonville defense had to start playing differently because they had to take Travis Taylor seriously.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny to say this today that, hey, we got Travis Taylor and Tony Banks. How can we lose?
Yeah, right?
those two guys, because it's a good year to be an Arizona Cardinals fan. I just remember this commercial from ESPN from years ago where they're going through all the bad teams at the beginning of the season in November or December, and they're putting out all these guys like going to the bathroom and talking about their teams and how excited they were before the season started. Tony Banks really – this was the biggest game of his career with five touchdowns. Yeah. And he'd done some great things on the road. He actually has a very significant part of Ravens history with his 1999, really getting the franchise on the right track in the second half of that year. I think you'd have to say that the run to 5-1 would have been difficult without Banks. They had, games where this game anyway, where they really depended on him for some offense. The other four actually were really pretty one-sided defensive games, but this was an important one.
Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered with Tony Banks too, where did, cause there was talent there. We're not talking about a guy who wasn't in a position where he didn't have talent. I mean, this was a talented kid. I believe he was a second round draft pick. He just didn't, he never could put it all together consistently. But you kind of figured when he, particularly this year with Shannon Sharp and Ben Coates, and we had, you know, Kadri Ishmael, Jermaine Lewis had done some special things. I mean, this offense was pretty good. And to think we had Priest Holmes and Jamal Lewis, I mean, you're talking two running backs who a couple of years later are competing for league MVP and the best running backs in the game. Where did it go wrong for Tony? And what, you know, it's easy to blame coaches. And I know a lot of people like to blame Brian Billick and maybe, but who knows, but Tony Banks looked like the real deal in this game. And boy, did he lead that comeback? He was such a big part of it because the Ravens struggled to stop.
Yeah, they sure did. They had a lot of trouble. But if going back to Banks for a second, I mean, I always come back to the fumbles with Tony.
Yeah,
that he was a very chronic one per game kind of fumbler, and weirdest situations. He wasn't quite Kyle Bowler as like almost like a squirrel with a football and didn't know what to do with it, and you know, he'd kick it off his knee all the time and whatnot. But it's just anytime he was always had kind of smallish hands. And the ball was always kind of loose there. Any kind of contact, there's just a good chance it was coming out. You know, what Lamar does right now in terms of being able to accept blindside bumps and whatnot, Tony Banks, you got your arm on his arm. There's a pretty good chance the ball was coming out.
Yeah, and I think the one thing Lamar and some other great quarterbacks have, which Tony Banks didn't, was really those eyes in the back of his head to really have that sense of when the pressure's coming.
Yeah. All right, so a lot of other things are going on this game, and I just have to mention a couple of these as we go. So the Ravens got ahead 26-22, and then that lead extended, and was it 26-23? But anyway, lead extended to 32-29 before the big horrible play where Brunell completed yet another long bomb down the right sideline.
To who else?
Yeah. And let's see, that was the 40-yard touchdown to Smith.
Smith, yeah.
Late in the fourth quarter. So that was with only, let's see, minute and 55 to go. So the Ravens got the ball back with 1:45 to go. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about that drive? Because there's some special players on that drive.
Whew. I mean, where do you start with that drive? I don't want to start at the end of that drive by any means, but I mean, to me, Shannon Sharp like justified his contract on that drive. But I think what also really goes unsaid is the job of the offensive line late in that game. You're in that situation where they're down. And I thought this was really a coming out party for what that offensive line was going to be for the rest of the season. So I'm a little bit Jeff Mitchell particularly stood out to me at that center position in this game, really anchored things on that drive. And really were able to give Banks the time he needed to throw. And then obviously the play that always sticks out to me is the touchdown to Sharp, but didn't Kadri Ishmael have a big first down catch on that drive as well?
The guy who was there is Billy Davis. People forget about him because he was a great special teams player for the Ravens.
Yes.
He played all 16 games, but he only played a handful of snaps as a receiver and had four targets all year. Well, he had two receptions and they're both second and 10 conversions. They had incomplete both times on first down. And then they gained 19 and 15. It was like Patton through Europe going down the field there to bring the Ravens to the 41 yard line with 1:05 to go. Yep. Then they had a pass to Ayan Badeja for 12. That got him to the 29 yard line. A spike leaves him with 48 seconds. And then it was the over the middle, right down that right seam, pass to Sharp for the touchdown from 29 yards.
Right in the end zone either. They had a shot to stop him, but Shannon Sharp wasn't being stopped on that play.
Yeah, he rolled right over. I don't remember who the defender was there, but he did roll right over him.
Yeah, he hit him pretty hard. If I see the name, I bet I could remember. But, whew. Yeah.
The Ravens still did not have it won.
Nope.
You know, because you had Mark Brunell with 41 seconds, and today, you know, with the length of field goals, we would not feel safe at all. And Mike Hollis had one of the best career games of his career. He had made all five field goals in that game. So, not a sure thing for any sense. Peter Boulware came up with a huge sack, and then Corey Harris intercepted a 4th-and-14 throw with 4 seconds to go. And the hay was in the barn, as they say.
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of people refer to, always think about the Harris play, but I think the Boulware sack was so critical on that drive because Brunell was really thinking at that point and Brunell was normally very good at making those quick reads, getting that throw out. And there was a little bit of a hesitation in his step. And that's kind of ultimately what led to that Harris interception. And Harris sealed the deal. And as you said, the hay was in the barn and the party started.
Yeah. Just one of those great games, obviously. And some of this, I've watched it many times since, of course, but I was listening to it on the way home from this pool tournament and regretting like heck that I had done it. But it was good, a great game for Baltimore to finally get it done and beat 2-0 that season. They went to Miami, had a little bit of a letdown game the next week where they lost. But this game was very special.
Yeah, we were famous for those letdown games for a period of time. But I think what also stood out to me so much is this was really the first time I remember that as a fan, you started to worry a little less about not having the ball late with this defense. And I felt like this game gave the defense that extra push from being good to great. And they just understood what it took. All the pieces came together for them with all that talent on how to lock down and close out a game. And you just think about the talent on that defense. We talked about the linebackers, but if you think about your Siragusas, your Burnett's, you had McAllister, Starks, Rod Woodson, Kim Herring, that's a loaded team and guys who had some brilliant careers.
Yeah, so everybody remembers the starting 11, and they were certainly great. And the point I always like to make is that this team played more DB-heavy packages than any Ravens team in history. Tons of – well, except their 2019 team. They played 34.5% dime and quarter. And the three guys they brought in, real journeymen. But Marvin Lewis knew how to make them right. Yep. Robert Bailey, James Trapp, and Corey Harris were terrific players, and they were on for a lot of high leverage snaps.
Well, and you also had a guy at the linebacker spot. He was that fourth linebacker in Cornell Brown. He really had a strong year that year and did a lot of special things. And you're right, Marvin Lewis really knew how to play to the strengths. And by the way, for all those starting 11 I meant, I didn't even mention Mike McCrary. So What type of Ravens fan am I talking about one of the biggest seasons from McCrary and I didn't mention him?
Yep, it was a day not to forget and really special, I think, for Ravens fans. And they went through they scored 36 points in this one, 39 points in this
39.
One, and then they went through a whole month of October where they scored 50 points and it was all the kicker, or maybe it was 51 points, but you know what I mean.
Five games without a touchdown. That was so much fun.
Yeah,
but you think of how many touchdowns they scored here. They scored, five touchdowns in this game, I believe? Yeah, Tony Banks threw five touchdowns. And then they went five games without one. What would the difference have been if he didn't throw those five here and spread them out over the others? We might not have been having this conversation today.
Yeah, maybe not. Or, they could have won some of those games, too, because all of those games they lost close.
Yeah.
And they lost 9-6 to Pittsburgh, and they lost 10-3 to Washington, and they lost, 14-6 to Tennessee. So it would have could have been a very different story, certainly, but that seemed very special, and it's, I think, we don't really know to what degree the defense was really getting on the offense and saying, hey, this can't continue, you guys need to start pulling your own weight and whatnot, because it's easy, it's a formula when you have one side so much stronger than the other for divisiveness within a locker room.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I think also the defense kind of figured out who they were as a team. But I think also something to be real reminder of, and granted, it could have been how the game was going. Jamal Lewis and his insertion into the starting lineup is what really catapulted the Ravens in that second half of the season. Priest Holmes had a great year, but there was a difference, at least to me, once Jamal became in and Priest Holmes was more of that mm-hmm. change of pace back. Obviously, he'd go on to have a brilliant career with the Chiefs starting the following year. But when Jamal came in, that kind of helped the offense really form their identity and get back to more of that power running game. I think Brian Billick even had the comment of, I've been turned to the dark side when it came to adopting the run. Because at the time, you know, he was supposed to be the greatest passing wizard after all the success he had with Randy Moss and Randall Cunningham in Minnesota.
Yeah. So Jamal didn't run much in this game. So he ran 5 for 16 against Pittsburgh, 5 for 7 against Jacksonville. And it was a case of he was still recovering from a preseason injury, is my recollection. And they were planning to get him in more. And he went 9 for 76 against Miami in that Sunday night game. Yep. And then he really took off from there, 25 for 116 against Cincinnati, and finished with 1,364 yards that year, which I guess most people do remember just how great he was and what a problem it was to lose him before 01.
Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, you had Priest Holmes, who I believe Priest finished with over 500 yards rushing. So between the two, I want to say he was at 501, but I might be making that
588.
Up. All right, I was 87 yards off.
You're good.
But, you know, they're what a special 1-2 punch that was. And then Dilfer really able to really be that game manager that they needed. You know, with that defense, they were just so connected at the end of the season. But it all started here. The defense figured out how to lock things down at the end of this game. And this was the game where I feel like this is the game the team learned how to win. They learned how to be winners, not just win, but be winners.
Yeah, you make a great point about Dilfer being a game manager, because that's the one thing I don't think Tony Banks could have been for this team. Is a guy who would manage a game. He's too much of a high variation player in terms of the fumbles, for one thing. And it's not like Dilfer was perfect in terms of turnovers. He threw 12 touchdowns, had 11 interceptions in 2000.
Right.
And yet he won because he was he tried to avoid bad decisions.
Yep.
and got him in. And then he was better in the postseason as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing about it too is, you know, sometimes, particularly a young quarterback like Banks was. Not that Dilfer was old, by the way. He was only, 6 or 7 years into the league. Not like he's an old man. But sometimes the younger players, which Banks still was, they try to do too much versus just doing what's asked of them. And that's very football cliche. But when you try to force things in that you don't really have the mental aspect to understand, where are we in the game and when should I take that chance versus I shouldn't, that kind of impacted Banks throughout his career.
Yeah, he didn't succeed in St. Louis, obviously. He came to Baltimore, and in 1999, the thing I'm most happy about with Banks is that he pulled the Ravens out of the horrible start with Jeff Mitchell,
yes.
Got them started on the right track in that second half with their first big winning streak. Included that, you know, the big game at Pittsburgh with the three bombs to Cadre and the huge win at home over Tennessee, which was the most impressive win in team history at the time. And it's not far from that still.
Oh, it was amazing. And he really was the right quarterback for that season. And he probably was the right quarterback to start this season. Cause mm-hmm. who knows what happens if Dilfer's the guy coming out, but the players believed in Tony. And we did have some talent at the skill set, which we didn't have for a few years, you know, once 02 and 03 started coming around. But I'm always mind blown by Travis Taylor. Who would have thought that his peak career game would have been the second game of his career?
Yeah, that's a great point. Is that he really never got back to that same level before the 2000 injury. And I don't think it was related to the injury. You know, some of it was related to having Kyle Bowler as his quarterback. And
that didn't help.
I will say this about Taylor is that he never really benefited from having a good quarterback. Dilfer was not really okay. Banks might have been the best guy he had thrown to him in his career. And I have to think about who he went to with Minnesota, whether it was Culpepper at the time or whether it was somebody else. But it's just a tough. You can not get the right quarterback if you're a coach, and that was definitely true of Brian Billick, but you can also not get the right quarterback as a receiver and never have your career work out.
And I believe when he went to Minnesota, it was Culpepper at first, but then Culpepper had that knee injury that same season. So, okay. And I can't remember who the backup was. But yeah, you're right. I mean, who knows what would have been had Brad Johnson come here instead of Elvis Gerback in 2001. Mm-hmm. Who knows what that could have done for a Travis Taylor.
Yeah, that might have eliminated the bowler draft pick, too. That would have been pretty sweet.
That would have been nice. No offense, Kyle.
All right. Josh, fantastic having you on for this. I appreciate you giving us a real thorough kind of look at this great game in Ravens history. And I know a lot of people – we've had, by the way, seems to be a lot more people want to discuss a big loss than a big win for whatever reason. But I'm happy to do this because we've been enough downer trips so far recently.
Losses are just too easy. I love to, again, maybe it's the former high school football coach in me, but I love to think about those big wins. I mean, they're a lot more fun. You can think about the 2012 season and what, you know, that Patriots regular season game where, you know, the Sunday night game, the Torrey Smith game, that could be a whole episode. There are just monumental wins. But this game to me changed the Ravens franchise and possibly in a way that we're a wave that we're still running on to this day.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, one of the things is for sure true is that this is still one of the greatest home games of all time, whether you want to put the Chiefs game in the same category or the Patriots game from 2012 or, you know, there are several others as well. 2003 Seattle certainly should be in that group.
Oh, yeah.
But this is really one of the great games of all time. And it's Josh, really appreciate having you on. Where can folks talk football with you?
Yeah, so I love to talk football. I'm a little opinionated, but I'm on Twitter at Word of J, which is short for Word of Josh. I do throw out a football podcast on my Facebook page, Word of Josh. So every Monday night, I do what I call Monday Night Josh and just kind of do a quick Ravens recap. I'm also from New York, so I do hit some Giants talk for my family up there. But yeah, Twitter, talk to me, Word of J, Word of Josh podcast. And Ken, it's been a pleasure. I love reading all your stuff, and your line breakdowns are just tremendous. I can't thank you enough for the amount of time and effort you put into them.
I appreciate you taking a read, Josh, and thanks for coming on as well. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study. We'll be right back.